it's ready. I'd like to make an announcement that we will have a workshop called What is Deaf Folklore? We will begin in about 5 minutes here in the blue and white tent.
We'll, in 1 minute, we'll start the workshop entitled, What is Deaf Folklore?
No, go talk to Neil. Ask him if he wants to.
You're not ready? I'm ready.
Ready? What are we doing? Oh, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the 15th annual Smithsonian Folk Festival. Yeah, I missed that. And welcome to our tent of folklore of the deaf. Now we'd like to give a workshop entitled What is Deaf Folklore? We'll be talking about social life at the social clubs for the deaf in the United States. And later we'll talk about school life. The participants will share their experiences with you. Now, I'd like to tell you a little bit about some folklore. First, you know that folklore is defined as traditional beliefs, legends, stories, jokes, and other things that are passed on from person to person, usually by word of mouth, in a hearing society. But we are in a deaf community, and so perhaps we could say, quote, passed on by signs of hand. There are over 200 social clubs for the deaf in the United States, and they'll be talking about their experiences, one or more of these clubs for the deaf all over the country. We'll be interviewing them, and after this interview, you may bring up any questions you like. Let's begin with, I'd like to have each one introduce themselves, tell where they work, and then we'll begin the questioning.
Good morning. My name is Steve Jones. I work at Washington Post. I grew up in Baltimore, and I moved to Washington, D.C. about 10 years ago. I first learned sign language when I started working at the Post. There's about maybe 100 printers there that are deaf. So when I went to work there, I had a choice of not talking to anyone, really, or learning sign language. So I learned sign language. It was a little bit unusual to work with a lot of deaf people around, people in front of me, people on both sides of me, people behind me, and they're gesturing, waving. Something wrong? They're waving and gesturing. And I have no idea what they're talking about. A lot of hearing people get a little paranoid when deaf people are talking sign language around them. For some reason, they think that they're talking about the hearing person. Hearing people maybe think they're more interesting than they really are because deaf people usually don't care what the person next to them is doing. One thing I noticed about the deaf community, about the what you could call part of the folklore of the community, is that as concerns work, most people don't get to work until it's time to go to work. The deaf people I work with will show up in half an hour or 45 minutes early to talk to their friends who work on other shifts and to catch up on all the gossip. It's sort of like a social gathering before and after work.
You want me to stand? Sure, you can stand. My name is Lily Burke, and I'm from Greenbelt, Maryland. I work for the government. I originally was from New York. I grew up in a deaf family, and I grew up in a deaf world. My name is Jan DeLapp. I grew up in Wisconsin. I went to the deaf school, deaf residential school. My mother is deaf. My father is hearing. I moved here to go to Gallaudet, and presently I'm working at the Washington Post as a printer. My name is Libby Hathaway from in Maryland. Both my parents are deaf. I graduated from the Maryland School for the Deaf in Frederick, Maryland. And I've done some various odd jobs, such as teaching sign language, part-time actress, working for restaurants. Presently, I'm working for Studio 101. My name is Dick Moore. I've lived here for 10 years. My original hometown is in Kentucky. My parents are deaf also. I work for the Washington Post as a printer. I'd like for you to tell about your school experiences. What school did you go to? Is it a residential school, day school? I forgot that, right. I went to an oral school, but I used sign language at home. At the school, I had to be very patient and try to use the oral method. That was in New York. What about you, Dick? My school in Kentucky was a Kentucky school for the deaf, and I lived at the school most of the time. My school was almost like a military academy. It was a wonderful experience. All right. The audience might like to know about your experiences in deaf clubs. Can you explain to us what it looks like inside the deaf club? Can you tell us something? Something famous? You know, they always have a stairs going up to the second floor. The clubs are always on the second floor. I like to say that you see the performance from Tales of a Club Room, that would explain everything. Yes, why don't you explain a little bit of something? Let's see, there were four of us here that were in that play. Oh, not me. Well, she helped us out. Many deaf people responded to that play very well. Most of the time, I see deaf people go to plays and then they forget all about it. They enjoyed it, and then it was at Gallaudet. Gallaudet gives many performances, and there's many others all over the place that give performances. Response is so-so. I don't want to brag, but our play was really wow. It was a lot of ovations from the audience because the play and everyday deaf life in the deaf club related to them so well, and they really enjoyed it. Let me explain to you what she's talking about. We have a theater called Tales from a Club Room, and it was based on social life in a deaf club house, and the deaf people inside. It was given last year in Ohio and then in other different states, and some of them may not be familiar with what you were talking about, so would you explain maybe what it looks like in the club? Well, as I said, you usually always go up one flight of stairs to get to the club, wherever it is. We always rent an area, space, and it's usually on top of some commercial building in a large town. Will be a lot of folding chairs, some card tables. There'll probably be a bar with a refrigerator, a small stove maybe to cook some small things. There'll be a TV in a corner. Maybe every Friday or every Sunday night we'll have captioned films. Usually you'll find anywhere between 30, 50, maybe 100 deaf people that are there over the weekend. You come in, maybe you need a key to get in. Some is a doorbell, and someone will open the door and then let you in. You sit around. You'll see your friends, a lot of hellos. Anything else to add? Yes, I could add something. Remember that we play cards. Yes. Many people find the deaf club, you'll see many pictures all over the walls, like bowling tournaments, fishing awards, past and present presidents from years ago to present. And then they always play cards, poker or guts or tell funny jokes. Clubs have sports such as basketball, softball, We do have contact with many clubs around the country for our sporting tournaments. Can you tell us when we'll have the next tournament? We'll have a softball tournament, in fact, today and tonight, and it'll have a big social event. People will be getting together. Many people will come from all over the eastern states down to it. I guess it'll be about 10 different teams being played in the tournament. Lily? Steve, can you tell us your first experience in a social club? Something like this?
Probably my first and strongest impression of a social club, a deaf club, was the loud music. There's always a jukebox, and it's always turned up to maximum volume. Some people have more hearing difficulties than others. There are varying degrees of hearing impairment. Some people can hear fairly well. Some can hear just a little bit. Some can't hear at all. But they still can feel the vibrations of the music through the floor. So can I. Also through my ears and my stomach and the tips of my fingers and everything else, because they really do turn it all the way up. It's a little odd when the music stops, all sound stops, because there's no conversation that you can hear, no audible conversation.
Anything else you'd like to add, Lily? Talking about the clubs, you know, the deaf clubs, you know, hearing people also have clubs too. So it's just something similar. It's nothing, you know what I mean? A social gathering to meet other deaf people. Sometimes you may not have plans on Saturday night, so you'll go down to the club to meet and talk, keep up with what the news is, like, you know, like what they're saying. Yes, I'd like to point out that people do not communicate so much with their hearing. Deaf people do communicate with their coworkers writing, sometimes signing. It's not as comfortable as the way hearing people communicate with their coworkers during the week. So there's more encouragement for them, motivation to go down to the deaf clubs on the weekend to speak comfortably with people who do use the language of signs. Would you like to tell us something about the entertainment, dance, anything special? You may have some experiences. Well, often we do present various shows that are visual programs, like during Christmas events, Halloween perhaps. We'll have big events during these times, and many of the people enjoy these. I grew up so-called in a deaf club. My mother was deaf, and I went to the club with Mom, talked with the people there. All the adults, of course, were older than I. I remember a long time ago, there were no teletypes, TTYs, devices that we could use to type through the telephone line to talk to another deaf person or a hearing person, whoever did have another machine like that at the other end. Type our messages back and forth. I guess that just came, about 15 years ago? Yes, I'd say about that. Before that, there was no contact. You'd have to go to the deaf friend's home. If they're not home, shucks. Now you can call and say, will you be home? Fine, I'd like to come over. In the past, there were no captioned films. So deaf clubs were very important social part of our lives where we could come together, keep up with the contact, pass around what news that had been happening during the week. Lily? Social clubs, not only, but we also had religious groups, church groups, civic groups, for civic-minded people, college groups, and state association. Sometimes they would meet at the clubs for these events. All right. I understand that when you go to other states and meet a deaf person in a club, you feel as a stranger to them, or... Can you explain how your experiences have been? Do they welcome you, or how do they deal with you? Dick, Well, I feel as a friend when I go to another club all over the country. For example, I went out to California. I did not know many deaf people there, but it was easy to make new friends. Always find a new friend by going to the deaf club, anywhere, in any state. Libby, yes, I started going to deaf clubs when I was 19 years old, although my parents are very active in clubs. Like my dad was a president of deaf club and was very active with children events like Easter socials, Christmas socials, Halloween, and so forth. So we decided to do some traveling, and we would stop at each deaf club. I might have felt a little bit strange for the first few minutes, introduce myself from Baltimore, and they say, oh, yeah, I know this person in Baltimore, and then we just start talking as if we had known them for months and months. It was it's always a very warm feeling. How did you feel as a hearing person coming into a deaf club? Did people kind of look at you funny as a hearing person? Jan's asking Steve.
No, not at all. When I first started learning sign language and becoming involved with deaf friends, everybody was very patient with my very limited skill in speaking sign language. They really went out of their way to help me, teach me new signs, and make me feel welcome. If you go into the club, people are very friendly. The bartenders are great. It's the same as visiting a deaf person's home. The hospitality is, quote, typically old Southern hospitality. You're invited to sit down. Can I get you something to drink? Would you like some cake, some coffee, something like this? They're very friendly and warm people. And as a hearing person, there wasn't any feeling that I felt of any sort of isolation because I was perfectly welcome. And they seemed grateful and appreciative that I was trying to learn their sign language since they couldn't learn to speak my language.
I have another thing Lily's saying. You know, the meetings are very important in the clubs, making plans for the next events. You know, we have election for officers, meetings like that, and secondly, you know, some of the clubs all over the country will have their own clubhouses and are very proud of it. They don't depend on the government. They didn't get anything. Like in Europe, you depend on the government to give money, but in the States here, we're very independent people. And it's a lot of responsibility, a lot of work, a lot of patience through the different events, getting money to pay for the clubhouse. Some rent, as she says, like the second flight of this going up the stairs and so forth, but some have very nice clubhouses and they're very proud of their own places. Yes, speaking of social life, such as in schools, we'd like for you to share with them your experiences. Would anyone like to open this part up? Say what it's like in a residential school. Yes, Jan? You know, each state, I suppose, has at least one state residential school for the deaf. Many small communities or large towns, maybe there'll be 10 or 2 or 5 or 6 deaf children, and they'll be all brought centralized to the residential school. And how old you are may depend on the different experiences you have when you go. I happen to be born in the same school, in the same town where this residential school is. And I remember the first day that I was sent to school, my mom went with me. We walked down, we went down there to the school, and it so happened that I had a little bit older deaf cousin, a girl who lived in the same residential school. She said, come and visit the cousin. I said, fine. We went down, and I saw many, many deaf kids just like me. I thought that was wonderful to play with. And while I was playing, my mother took off. So it was time for lunch. I said, where's my mother? No, no, you may stay here. No, 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 I must go home. No, I'm not staying here. So I was a little confused, upset. In the dorm, the kids slept in large rooms with the beds lined right up, maybe 10, 12, and then another row in the same place. all nice, clean white sheets with iron frames. And I was sent there in the little girl to the, where the little girl's dorm was. And I started crying. I want my cousin with me. I don't want to be alone. So the house mother went over to ask if my cousin would move from her, the older dorm, to the little kiddies dorm for one night. Now, of course, my cousin did not like that. I had to sleep in the little girl's room. Ugh. Anyway, she was there in the next bed. And I was looking around. It was dark, and it was such a strange place, and went to sleep in the morning early. Before they turned the lights on, kids started waking up and started playing, throwing things. The pillows were flying. I thought, oh, this is fun. But I did have mixed emotions for the first year or so. Sometimes it was fun. Sometimes I wanted to be home. But gradually, I began to enjoy my life at the residential school. Thanks. What about you, Dick? What about your residential life at the deaf school? Can you share that with us? Yes, we also would get up early in the morning, but we'd have to clean our beds and keep them nice and neat and straight. If the supervisor would see it messed up, would rip the whole bed up and make us start over. And we'd have to do it again and make it right, nice and neat. And we have to line up in a nice straight line to go to eat, and then we'd go off to school for the day, and then after school we'd play sports for the afternoon. We had to keep our dorms clean. I remember that, always cleaning and mopping every day. Libby, you're talking about your schools. I remember when I went into school, I was 8. I was rather late because I'd come over from Europe. And I was scared, very scared. It was a new experience for me to go into a school. All these clothes we had to bring. And everybody was so good to me. All these different languages were coming and trying to figure out communication. After a while, I really loved it. As I look back, all this group, it was like she said, you know, all the beds and everything, we shared the different problems, shared our creative stories. And as I grew up, I still remember them, and I still have good friends. Where I go to New York, I always go back and visit them, and we still keep good relations. And I think it was because of our experiences at the school. In a day program, it's a little different. A residential school, I remember all these things. At nighttime, you may not be able to get to sleep, so they would try to help us go to sleep by, you know, rubbing our arm, or my friend would try to help, and then if not, then we'd try to sign in the dark at night, run to the bathroom where we could talk, where the light was on. We had so many good times at the school. Libby, I remember staying at the school during the week, then I'd go home every weekend. I remember going at the first time to the school was with my grandmother, and I saw many different deaf children beginning to play. Then my grandmother disappeared. I said, where's my grandmother? The house parent said, no, you stay here. And I started to cry, and I decided I don't like this school because I would not be living with my friends, my family. I'd be all these strangers. Then after several weeks, I got used to it, but I still wanted to go home. The first year was kind of mix, but after that, I really loved the school. And I really do appreciate it because it trained us in many different ways, like how to brush our teeth right and dressing properly and how to make our beds very, very neat. You had to have those corners just right, and that pillow had to be just fluffed right and tucked in. If it was messed up, they'd pull the whole thing off and do it over again. We had to get up in straight lines. Boys would be in one line, girls in another, going to dinner. It would be separate when we'd eat. We'd go back to the dorm. Before the school would start, these lines we'd be in straight lines. Cleaning and mopping, that was part of it, the sweeping. And we had to have turns on cleaning the bathrooms. I'll never forget one experience. When I was a little bit more grown up, I had to clean my room every day before going to school. It began at 8. Get up, dress. I didn't feel like cleaning the floor, so I decided to just mop just right around the bed and just kept on walking with the flashlight. The supervisor would look under and saw all the dust under the bed. I had to go back in and do it all over. But it was fun at school. Very good. What kind of games did you learn from the school? Can you give us an example of some of the games? Jan? In the fall, there'd be the boys would have to do the lawn, get all the leaves all piled up, and they'd leave them there to be picked up the next day. We'd come in and we'd make big houses out of them. The leaves we'd make in rows and then burrow it out, and we'd say, well, this is the living room, and then we'd make another row over here and say, that's the bedroom, make another wall on the other side. And then we'd clean out a little area so we could use for the doorway. And then we say, well, now this is the living room. Now you can't just step over. You have to go through where the door is. And we'd play house that way, talk and play. Sometimes we'd play Indians and cowboys. Or sometimes we'd just jump in the middle of the big pile where we'd have a very large grounds. And we'd have very large piles of these leaves that had been raked up. And we loved to play in that.
Lily? In my day when I was in school, we were in the middle of New York City, and they had, like you were talking about, leaves and things. We didn't have any. That was an older school. My friends would be talking, you know, and we'd be talking, like, about strange piles and, like, different buildings would be all around us, and the school was in the center. We really had a lot of fun there. There wasn't any leaves and things like that, but we'd play games. You know, deaf people would be very creative with their games. We'd be playing tag and swinging and everything. It was really fun. And you could see the people from the apartment buildings looking down at our school, looking down, and we were, you know, they'd throw us candy sometimes, you know, and we'd be down there holding our hands up for candy and things like that. I'd like to get some information from you on the kinds of games, like deer hunter, elephant game, other things. Oh, I know. I have one game. Another game, bear. We had this big basement, and in the middle of it, I don't know what it was, but this column, it probably had some machine inside it or something. I don't know. We never knew what it was, but we had to walk around it. And there was a large doorway. And maybe like on Saturday afternoons when we didn't have anything to do, we'd say, do you want to play bear? You want to play bear? And we'd have to be quiet because the supervisor didn't like the game and she'd always stop us. So we'd all run down into the basement and the girls would stand here and the other girl would be behind the column so I couldn't see her. So the lights would go out and it'd be real dark. And you're supposed to run like through the doorway and you'd be safe. But if you're tagged, you're out. So it'd be real dark, and we'd be going around the column like this, back and forth, and we'd be, I was always screaming. And then later the supervisor would hear, and here she'd come, get out, get out, get out, and she'd be screaming, and we'd be running. One more information on games before we close. What's that stairs game? You explain it. Okay, like 1, 2, 3, 4... B, 5, 10, 15, B. Like you'd have to make a circle and you'd go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you're out. You're supposed to say B. We did a lot of games like that. Tag, deer, hunter. Like you make two columns and one group decides if you're going to be a deer. Or another man will be a gun, another group will be a gun or a man. And if I say shoot, you can't shoot a man, so you're out. So you're supposed to be a deer. So you get points like that until you win and so forth. It's really a lot of creativity in games. Also, we had to make up stories from the ABC, the alphabet. And numbers, too, number games. He's meaning that this ABC story and the number games will be given at 2 o'clock this afternoon. You can see something entitled Sign Folklore. It's storytelling. Now it's time for you, the audience, to ask questions before we close here. Does anyone have any questions to ask the participants?
From
sign language in America is pretty much consistent, standard. But we do have some local differences, like dialect. Like your sign, it might be like Oregon. What's your sign? Orange. And this is my sign for orange. And here's another sign for orange. Orange. Do you know one? Orange. Okay. There's just little differences. From Texas, you know, there's a few like that. But pretty much it's standard. In Europe, it's different, though. They have a different sign language there. In different countries, it's different. But really, there's no problem in communicating. Is there any more questions?
How about Canada? What language do they use there?
I think English and French. A combination of both. Their signs are a little different. When they're talking English, then they do the same sign language as we do. Like many people come to Gallaudet, so I think it's almost the same. More questions? No comment. Livy says, I don't really think it's exact English myself. I use ASL, and it's a little difficult for me to change it into exact English. It's different to me. Another one? Yes, yes. You can see for yourself. Like I was saying yesterday afternoon, when I was little, not many people knew about deaf people, and they said, oh, you can't hear? Oh, my God. Nowadays, it's so different. You know, I feel like I was born too early. Nowadays, deaf awareness is spread out, like sign language classes are all over. It's a fad, and people are becoming interested. We still have problems, yes, but more and more awareness now, definitely. It's true. You weren't born it's not too late anyway. Deafness is not contagious. Don't be scared, but sign language is contagious, and I hope you catch it. I'd like to add that I went to different public restaurants and other places, and I was very surprised to see waitresses and waiters signing to me and other deaf friends of mine. Sometimes some policemen will know sign language, and that makes us feel like a first-class citizen. And that's through deaf awareness programs all over this country. Another question? I think education in that way, it's different. Educators think that way. Deaf children, when they learn ASL, that's their native tongue. They learn to sign. They express themselves better. And signed English to use in school is fine, but it's important for those deaf children to be able to express themselves through ASL. And if the teachers say, no, 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 they're going to hold it all in and become frustrated. That's the same with oralism. And I feel that it's good, but in the school, teaching for reading and writing, yes, but you can't say, no, don't use ASL. It's confusing to the children also. One more question. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Oh, there's so many books. You can find more information if you get the program booklet of this festival. You can see a listing of references, and you can find all really good books there on information on sign language and other information on deaf cultures. If you get a program booklet from someplace, I don't know, some in one of the tents here. May I add to that? Sign language is a very visual language. You don't really learn it from a book alone. A book will help you, but you need someone to see it and help you with it. There are a lot of information like sign language books on the market now and outdated ones. And there's several new books coming up, so you have to go with the new books that are coming up. Like yesterday, I just learned that we have a new dictionary, a new sign for dictionary, this sign. I never knew that. That's, you know, a few of the old books are outdated, so you have to make sure that you look for the newer ones. We do have updated books entitled, in the program books that you'll find here on the festival grounds. I want to thank you very much for bringing your questions, and I would like you to help me thank the participants. Now I'd like to make an announcement. For our deaf visitors, I would like you to come to the collection area to make videotapes of your stories and experiences for our archives after this. If you can go to the collection area right behind you there. Also, I'd like to suggest that your children might want to go to the other tent across the way here. They have a special program entitled Through the Listening Horn. There's dancers and performers will give skits on deaf awareness for your children, and that your children may enjoy that very much to understand about sign language and other programs. If you would like to know more about the deaf culture and the folklore, we'll have a book written by a deaf man entitled Jack Gannon. The title of the book is Deaf Heritage by Jack Gannon, and you can buy one of those books at the Crafts selling tent. We have a teletype demonstration in the next tent to see how deaf people can communicate through the telephone. And also, you can see our models to see how deaf people get up every morning. How do they get up? Through alarm clocks? You can see the models, different kinds of models, in the other tent also. And last, at 12 noon here in this tent, we will be having a traditional deaf theater. No. Stories and skits. We switched them. It's sign folklore. Sign lore. Okay, excuse me. At 12, we'll have signing lore and storytelling. And you can see typical skits that are given in the deaf clubs. So if you'd like to come here at 12 noon, thank you very much. I don't know. If you're interested, please write a letter to the Smithsonian Folk Festival. Thank you very much. Oh, wait a minute. One more.
deaf theater given in about 2 minutes. Come to watch deaf performers giving skits, jokes, and sign lore and other things. Everybody will enjoy this in 2 minutes. The 15th annual Smithsonian Folklife Festival. Welcome to our folklore of deaf program. We'll be presenting some exciting performances entitled Traditional Deaf Theater, Jandilap, and Studio 101. We'll present her topic, Deaf Kaleidoscope. Jan DeLapp. Welcome. For today, there has been a change. The last 3 days, we did the theater first, and then the sign folklore second show. Today, we have made a reverse. All right? Oh, yes, I forgot. Fine. We like to share with you the things that we can do with our hands. Signing, finger spelling. I hope that many of you know some finger spelling. How many of you are deaf here? Okay, how many are hearing? How many know finger spelling? Good. Very good. I see more and more of this every day. If you don't know what finger spelling is, look along the sides of the tent. And I hope that maybe if you have some time to look around, you might be able to try to finger spell your name. That would be nice. And one other important sign that you must know is this. What does that mean? It all incorporates the idea, I love you. I, L, and then the Y, symbolizing, I love you. Before we begin, I'm sure that many of you are saying to yourself, I don't know signs, I'll watch. But I'm sure that you really do know more signs than you thought. Signs are a language of their own, but also there are many, many, many gestures commonly used by you hearing people, whether you're hearing or deaf. That one, for example. You know that. How about that? This? These are simple things like that that you know. Body language also is important. The deaf will watch the body language and perhaps understand pretty much of what's going on. Let me show you a little something like this that happens between a deaf man and a hearing man at a bus stop. How they respond to each other. Before I go ahead, first I will have my people come up here and let you take a good look at them. This is Steve Jones, Dick Moore, and Libby Hatway. Can you people tell me which one of these is hearing? I have a vote here. Who's been here before? This one? What about this one? Is she hearing? We've got some various choices here. How can you tell? There's no way you can tell which one is hearing and which one is deaf. It's a very invisible thing, a hearing loss. But to help you a little bit, here's the hearing one. I'm deaf from a deaf home where my mother is deaf, my father is hearing. He is deaf from a deaf home where both parents are deaf and grandparents are both deaf, and his four generations of deafness. Libby is also from a deaf family, and I think there's been three generations of deafness, parents and grandparents. Like to show you the bus stop. He'll be the deaf man waiting for the bus coming in this direction. Let's see what happens.